Save big money when you start your next project today at Menards. Convert your current recessed lighting with energy-saving LED downlights from Fight Electric. They're bright and install easily in just minutes. They also go from regular lighting to nightlight mode with just a simple flip of a switch. Save big on all Fight lighting products now at Menards. Shop our lighting options today in-store and on Menards.com. Save big money
at Hi guys, quick one before we get into the episode. This episode is sponsored by Zencastr, which is the production suite that I've used from the very beginning of this podcast. And if you're interested in starting your own podcast, hang around at the end of the episode for our 30% discount referral code. Thanks.
So our podcast is called Right and Wrong.
Are these your notes? Are these your notes about what we're going to say?
Anything. Nailed it. Yes, a short answer.
So how many novels did you not finish?
Oh my prior? God, so many.
It was perfect. What's she talking about? This is nonsense.
Ooh, a spicy question. I love it.
This is it, guys. The big secret to getting published is you have to write a good book. You heard it here first. We're going to
Hello and welcome back to the Right and Wrong podcast. I'm Jamie, and chatting with me today is the head of editorial at the award-winning digital platform Black Ballad, joining us just after the launch of her new novel, Hope and Glory. It's Jendela Benson. Hi.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, it's my pleasure. How's it going? You must be sort of busy with post-launch things to do with the book. How's it all been, the launch and everything?
Yeah, it's been good. It's been interesting because it's like you're kind of ramping up to like launch, and then it kind of like happens and you're like, okay, yeah, this actually keeps going. Like, you have to keep promoting and keep, it's not just like, oh, bam, there we are, we're all done. So I'm learning that it's definitely a marathon, not a sprint.
Yes.
But I'm just trying to enjoy it as much as possible, to be honest, and not like, yeah, not get so caught up in it that it stops being fun.
Oh, well, that's great. That's a great mentality to have taken on that. And first things first, for everyone listening, let's talk about the book. What is it all about, Hope and Glory?
Yeah, so at the beginning of Hope and Glory, we meet Glory, who's been living out in LA. She's been looking quite great on Instagram, you know, living a glamorous life. But when her dad suddenly dies, she has to come back to England, specifically Peckham in South London. And she comes back to a family that is in complete disarray. So her sister is in this questionable marriage. Her brother has been imprisoned. He's been charged and convicted, and he's now in prison. And her mum is on the verge of a mental breakdown. And she comes back to this mess, basically, and she decides that she's going to try and fix everything. But in the process, she discovers a family secret, which is potentially just going to blow everything up and make things worse, as they do.
As they always do, as we all know. Yeah. Well, it sounds, it's great. And it is great. The, you know, so many aspects of like thriller and drama and all these kinds of things thrown in together. As a reading experience, you use these sort of quite punchy, weighty sentences, and it feels very personal and intimate a lot of the time. How much of it draws from your own experiences?
I think there's definitely elements of myself in Glory and in various other characters like Faith, her older sister. Nothing about the plot kind of tracks directly with my life, but it addresses certain things that I think are reality for a lot of second generation kind of like immigrant children in the UK. So there's a lot about family dynamics and about how like our relationships with our siblings and our parents. So there's a lot of truth in there, but it's not something that I think tracks directly with any kind of events of my own life. But yeah, it's just kind of observing those around me, my friends, my family, and kind of just trying to crystallize the truth of their situation and present it in a fictional format so that no one can sue me, basically.
So, okay, well, you do that very well, and hopefully no one will sue you. It's set in London, where you live and spent a lot of time when you were younger as well, and you really, it does feel very authentic, especially the parts around Peckham. Am I right in thinking that you spent a lot of time there when you were younger in Peckham?
Yeah, so my family have always lived in either Peckham or Brixton, so very familiar with South London. And then when I moved to London when I was 18, I lived in Peckham. And that is kind of where I guess, kind of came into my adulthood. And also my mother-in-law still lives in Peckham, so I'm still there basically on a weekly basis. So yeah, very familiar with Peckham.
That's great. That always comes through, I think, whenever I read a book and you can sort of tell that the author knows the area well, because there's a sort of, there's elements that someone who was writing who didn't know the area would never pick up on, like sort of smells or like nooks and crannies that just a passerby wouldn't know.
Oh, that's good. I'm glad.
And let's rewind a bit. So you've been writing and editing for quite a long time now as a columnist, a journalist for various magazines, and of course, one of the main players over at Black Ballad. When were you first drawn to writing and storytelling?
I think right from a very young age. So I think it was actually after reading The Secret Garden. I think that's by Frances Hodge Burnett. I should know, but it's Secret Garden is essentially one of those books from my childhood that I absolutely loved. And I read that book and I was like, yeah, I want to write a book like this. And I think, if I'm correct, she was one of the youngest published authors at the time, or there was someone, or one of her contemporaries probably got published. I think it was like 13 was the record for like youngest published author in the UK.
Wow.
And I remember being in primary school and being like, yeah, I'm going to break that record or whatever. And obviously I didn't. But yeah, that was kind of when I thought, yeah, I want to have a go at this. Like, I've always read. I was that kid that got books as presents. Like every single year it would be like, oh, what book have I been given this year from Auntie so-and-so? But yeah, I was always reading. But I think it was reading The Secret Garden was like the first time when I read a story and I was like, oh, I wish I could write a story that is like this, that kind of captures people's attention or captures people's imagination, even though I didn't necessarily have the language for that at that age. But that's what I felt, just that excitement of being like thrown into this world that you don't know, but you're learning about, and obviously the intrigue and the mystery and all that kind of stuff. So that was when I thought, yeah, I want to give this a go.
So you've always sort of wanted to be writing a novel and put one out there, but is this, am I right in thinking this is your first novel published?
Yeah, I mean, it was a bit of a journey. I tried writing a couple novels in my youth, which didn't go very far. So I was like, you know what, maybe this whole novel writing thing isn't for me. And I kind of gave it up very prematurely. But yeah, I cycled through a few other, I guess, careers. I grew up during the Iraq war, and for some reason that made me really want to be a war correspondent, which my mum was like, absolutely not. But then I wanted to be a journalist, and I wanted to be in broadcast media, and then at some point I wanted to be a graphic designer and then realized that wasn't it. And then I was a photographer and a filmmaker for a little bit, and then I came back to kind of writing when I had my first child and I couldn't be out in the world with like a camera and like loads of equipment. I started writing again, so it was kind of quite a circuitous journey, but I'm back to writing, and yeah, it feels very natural. It feels good. I'm glad.
I think everyone goes through a couple of books before they, it's unusual, I think, that someone will, the first book is the book that gets them published, unless they've done like 5 to 10 years of rewrites on that one book and slowly descended into madness. But it works for some people. So there you go.
Yeah.
And although this isn't your first, this is your first novel that's come out, but it's not the first book that you've put out into the world.
Yeah, so when I was a photographer, I did a project. So I used to do kind of like social documentary photography. So I was very much into storytelling around people's lives and like things that people are actually going through, like in my community. So I did a project called Young Motherhood, which was basically about young mums and kind of I had friends who were young mums that had kids in like their teens or like their early 20s, and I kind of had the privilege of kind of walking alongside them, but seeing the struggles that they faced, the judgment that they faced, all of that kind of thing, the way that stigma affected the choices that they felt they had to make for themselves and their children. So I kind of did this project where I just went around the UK photographing women and their children. So quote unquote young moms. So some of them were from their 20s to like their 40s and 50s. And I think the oldest was probably in her 60s. So these are all women who've had children in their teens or very early 20s. So I photographed them and I interviewed them. And then I kind of put it into a book, like a book format, that I transcribed the interviews and the photographs, but it was also an exhibition. So that exhibition kind of, it was in a few different places. It was at the House of Commons. It was also exhibited at the International Centre of Photography in New York as well. So that, yeah, that was, it was a really, it was a really important project for me. And I think I learned a lot about storytelling, I think, alongside that, even though it was a completely different genre and kind of like way of telling a story. But yeah, it was fun.
And you self-published that, is that right?
Yeah, yeah, I self-published that one.
What was that like as a process?
So because I studied graphic design and photography, I think it was kind of like just doing a project for uni. Essentially, so because I'd done kind of all through my degree, I'd done these kind of like little book projects. So I did a project called Where the Devil Won't Go, which is about a notorious estate in South London, which has now actually been torn down, but kind of some ex-gang members who lived on the estate and kind of came out of that lifestyle. And that was, I think, my final major project at uni. And again, it was interviews and pictures, and I turned it into kind of like a book as my final presentation for that. And then I did another kind of book around, it was a more kind of abstract project about memory and family. And it was like a film photography and kind of being experimental with like how I was taking pictures. And it was more like a visual essay, like kind of exploring memory and family and those kind of links. So that again was like presented as a book. So it's like, I've always kind of just done, I guess I'm so enamored by the form of the book that I've always kind of just made these projects into books. So I just feel like, yeah, it'll be great to have this in a book. And it's just a nice object to have and a great way of kind of just telling a story. So doing Young Motherhood was kind of just doing a uni project again, but having more time and kind of doing it over the course of a couple years rather than like trying to turn it around in 3 months or whatever.
That's great that you've got the kind of scope to take sort of responsibility of every aspect of the production of that and sort of wear all those different hats. That's awesome. So interesting to see now, you're going through the traditional publishing route with Hope and Glory.
Yeah.
How kind of strange is it, the kind of difference between those two things? Obviously, it's a very different thing that you're putting out into the world, but like the process-wise, how different has that been?
I think it's been different because I haven't had to do everything.
<That's> nice.
I just haven't had to do everything. Basically, like, there's actually people paid to like proofread and to like copy edit and to like put stuff together. So that's been great. That's been that's felt like a luxury. But also, I think, I guess, kind of doing this myself in various kind of iterations just gave me a more like, maybe, I don't know, I felt like I was just more prepared to be a bit more hands-on with certain things. So even like when it came to like designing the cover, I had a lot of opinions for my cover, and I was very much like, obviously the publisher and the sales team and everyone has to sign off on it, and they kind of essentially have final say on what the cover looks like, but I had very strong opinions and I kind of like gave my input and I guess brought my design background in, like tweaking like very specific things. So It was a good process because I didn't have to, I could be as involved as I wanted to, but then also I could similarly be, you know what, I'm not actually that bothered about that. You guys can do what you're doing with that. So I feel like it's a better way to work because otherwise it's quite draining doing everything yourself. I'm the type of personality that it's my default to do everything myself. but it's draining. And yeah, and also when you've got kids and a full-time job and all that kind of stuff, like it's just impossible. So it was nice to have like a team of people, and a team of people who get it ultimately, like people who you can actually trust to do the best by your book. Because I know some people don't necessarily feel like they have that in the publishing process, but I really did. So yeah, it was great.
So you felt like you kind of agreed with most of the things that the editors were saying and the sort of the way that the production was being done?
Yeah, I mean, anything that I didn't feel kind of comfortable with, I felt quite happy to kind of push back. But for the most part, I felt like our visions kind of aligned. I think for me, the big thing with the cover was I didn't want a silhouette on the cover, which is something that has been kind of a pattern amongst, especially like Black authors and Black women authors. Like, there always seems to be a silhouette on the cover in some kind of way. And I was like, I just don't want that. Partially because a couple years ago, I did a massive thread about how unimaginative it was. So I was like, I can't now come and have a silhouette on my cover after doing this big long thread on Twitter however many years ago complaining about it. But yeah, so that was where I had, and I know that with both my editors, I expressed, so my editor in the UK and the US, I expressed this. And when the first draft came back from the design team, both of them had silhouettes, and both editors were just like, yeah, we can't give this to her. like we can't do this. So it took so there was like this process of like the both covers taking so long to do, and I was like, what is going on? Like, why is it? And then afterwards, when we finally had a cover that we all agreed on, it was just funny. Both my editors were like, yeah, the first draft, we couldn't give it to you because it was a silhouette. And I was like, okay, I understand now why the process took so long. But that's, it was so just funny. Yeah, it was just having that kind of, I think it's been really great for me to have that relationship with like the people involved, where I can just be open and very forthright and not feel like it's an amazing opportunity to be published. And obviously it's every kind of like writer's dream, but yeah. Sometimes I think you can feel like you're almost like you don't want to be too much of a nuisance, because you don't want someone to all of a sudden just be like, hey, what are you doing here? Actually, we don't like you in your book, like, get out. Like, you feel so kind of like burdened by gratefulness that you don't want to like kind of cause any ripples or kind of cause any problems. But I didn't feel like that, and I knew that I didn't want to feel like that, because I was like, no, like, if this book is going to go out, I need to be able to stand by everything and not feel like I have to have any caveats about, yeah, well, I didn't really want it like this, but I felt like I had to, like, I didn't want that. So, yeah.
You've got to compromise in certain areas, but you need to, it needs to be still authentically you.
Exactly.
As the author.
Exactly. Because it's your name that's on the book ultimately. So if anyone's got any problems with it, they're going to be coming to you first and foremost.
Exactly. Well, I love both the covers. The two covers that are on your website. Is that the UK and the US one on the website?
Yeah. Yes. Thank
I love them
you.
Both. And they're bright and colourful. And I mean, it suits the title as well, you know?
Definitely. And it feels like a summertime, like spring, summer kind of. Yeah. I really like that about them both.
Well, you know, it's really nice to hear as well for myself and everyone listening that you can, when you go into that relationship with a publisher, you can, you know, push back. It's a collaboration. It's working both ways. You don't have to just do everything the publisher says.
Yeah. And I mean, I think that one, like with my editors, they were very clear when it was kind of like, this has been decided, we just want you to kind of sign off. If there's like no major issues, then fine. But for most of it, it is a collaborative process. No one at your publishers wants you to hate them because they've put out a book that you don't like. Like, they want you to be...
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you. With professional-grade industrial supplies, count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
As excited and as happy about it as they are. So I think it's always important to remember that. And you are the talent, right? You are the one who they are, who they've wanted to work with. Like, so yeah, it's a privileged position to be in, but at the same time, I don't feel like anyone should feel like, oh, beggars can't be choosers in that sense.
Yeah, exactly. And I've had some editors on the show, and speaking with them, it's the vibe that I got was it's very much they are there to try and get the best out of the author, not to say, oh, we should do this bit like that, or we should change the book to be like that. Yeah. It's more, this could be better. We could get more from you, and you could really come through more on the page here.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly it.
And speaking of your team, the support team, you are repped by the wonderful Juliet Pickering, who I was lucky enough to have on the show.
Yeah.
Based on sort of your quite prolific work outside of publishing, I was wondering if it was you that reached out to her on submission, or did she reach out to you?
I actually reached out to her. I was working on the very early kind of idea of Hope and Glory. Uh-huh. And I actually asked Nikesh Shukla about getting an agent, and you know, I didn't really know where to start, and he kind of said, oh, here are three agents that you might want to approach or whatever. And I kind of sent off, looking back now, very like, not the way that you should do it. This is not the way that you should approach it. I was literally just like, hey, I'm working on this idea, like, can we have a chat? And Juliet was the first agent who I met with, and I was just like, yeah, we just kind of gelled from the start. So I didn't even end up meeting any other agents. I was just like, yeah, this is it. Love at first sight, let's go.
That's amazing.
So yeah, I don't think the way that I did it is actually how you're meant to do it, but thankfully it worked.
Hey, yeah, it worked out. You know, if it worked out, don't knock it. So when you went to her, did you actually send her any sort of any of the manuscript or anything like that, or was it really just a sort of pitch?
It was really a pitch.
Oh, like, wow,
the manuscript wasn't even written. I think maybe there was like a few chapters that I had written down. No, it was just an outline, actually. I just had the outline of a book, and I'd been talking to an editor, not the editor that I ended up going with, but I've been talking to an editor, and it was kind of in this process of speaking with this editor, I was like, oh, I should probably get an agent now. Like, this is actually looking like it might turn into something real. So I just kind of sent an email. I was like, yeah, I've been speaking to this editor, and we're talking about potentially doing a book, and I think I need representation. And then we met up for, I think it was coffee, and I just told her the outline of the book as it was then. And we had a chat, and then I think it was actually on the launch party for Hope and Glory. She actually said that it took 8 minutes for her to be like after the meeting, like within 8 minutes, she was like, yeah, actually, I want to represent you. And then she sent the email, and I was like, yeah, sure, like, let's go. It was really like, I know this doesn't happen for most people, so I feel very, very fortunate that it happened this way for me. But it was really, it was a bit random. but it worked out.
Amazing. Well, that it's. I mean, I think it just speaks to my experience with publishing. Is most people who work in the industry are very friendly, and even if Juliet hadn't signed you, the fact that you messaged her and said, "Could we meet up? Could we? You know, I just wanted to chat with you." I'm sure she would have given you some amazing advice and, you know, set you on a really good path, even if she hadn't then decided to sign you. And I think it just speaks to the fact that anyone looking to kind of break into the industry with an agent, without an agent, however they want to do it, reach out to people and you know, there's a good chance that they will just meet you for coffee. And then, you know, who knows what will come from that.
I mean, exactly. I think people aren't as kind of elitist or kind of standoffish as maybe it looks like from the outside. I know some like younger writers, and I've been kind of like semi-mentoring one writer, and I remember as she was going through the process of like trying to get an agent, and she was reaching out to like quite a few agents, or I can't remember exactly how many, but she reached out to a few. She had like her manuscript kind of like ready, and she sent it out. And even the agents who said that they were, that they didn't feel that they were the right person to represent them or whatever the case may be, they still were really nice. Like, she showed me their emails and kind of like the screenshots of their responses, and everyone was just really nice. Like, people are always really encouraging. And I think the thing that is really important about publishing as well is that, I mean, it can be seen as a plus, it can also be seen as a minus, but a lot of it I think is also down to, like, there's like a weird alchemy of like different personalities coming together, because like you working with your agent or working with the editor, it's a professional relationship, but there also needs to be like a certain level of kind of just, I don't know, malleability, like just kind of like, I don't want to say magnetism because that sounds a bit like yes or no, but there just needs to be some kind of like connection. Like, your agent or your editor really needs to connect with you and your work in just in a very specific way. So even like the feedback that this writer was getting was very positive, and they're like, you know what, this is great, I just don't think I'm the right person to represent you, or, you know, good luck. And it was all very, very positive. And I think generally that is the stance of most people within the industry. Like, I haven't really come across anyone outright mean or like snobby or whatever. I think people are nice. It's just whether they feel like they're the right fit for you, or even whether you think that you're the right fit for them, because like, it's not just them choosing you, it's you choosing them.
Yes, exactly. And I know a few people who have had an agent and split up with that agent for various reasons, and often amicably, you know, more times than not, it's a mutual understanding that this partnership isn't going to work, and the author is probably better off with a different agent or doing something in a different way.
Yeah, exactly.
Speaking of doing things in different ways and the process of publishing, from when you first put the metaphorical pen to paper and started writing the book to it now being out in the world and you having the realization that marketing and press never ends, which part of this process have you found the most fun, and which part has been the most challenging?
I think the most challenging, I think, has been editing, because you always, it feels like you go through these like peaks and troughs. Like, you finish one draft of the book and you're like, oh, this is absolutely amazing, like, this is the best thing ever, and then you give it like a week or two, you read it back and you're like, what the hell was I thinking, like, this is absolute trash. So I find that process, and I'm in that process again as I'm working on like the second book, and I'm kind of like, oh, this is great, actually this might just be like steaming garbage, but it might be great. Like, you're just not really sure of what you've got, and your emotions are a bit all over the place as you're like working on this book. That is challenging, but I think the most fun part, I think, has just been talking about the book and like meeting readers and like hearing how people connect with the book in different ways, and actually feeling like, wow, this thing is out in the world and it's its own thing now. Like, yeah, these are my characters that I came up with and I wrote them, but they go out and people have their own interpretations of them and perceptions of them. People have their own favorites and their own kind of like ideas about what happened here or what should happen next if there was going to be a sequel. And it's like, which there's not going to be a sequel. Sorry, guys, I can't deal with the pressure. But it's like, that has been so much fun, because I just love talking about books in general. Like, I just love reading and talking about books. So to be able to talk about like my book and to hear people's like thoughts on what I've done has been, it's been great. And I mean, I stay away from online reviews, so far everything's been pretty positive.
That's always a wise thing to do. That must be so rewarding. I've spoken to a few authors who say, yeah, it's great, you know, if you get really good reviews online and you get lots of this press and lots of hype around it, but some of the most meaningful sort of reward that they find in it is if they literally speak to one person and that person says how it sort of reached them in a really personal way and affected you know, their life and the way that they see things, and they felt sort of reflected in the pages. That's just, I think there's so few things that are as rewarding as that.
Yeah, exactly. I think it is just, it's just another way of connecting with people, to be honest. And I think that even the most reclusive of authors is putting themselves out there to find some sort of connection with an audience. So that really makes it all worth it. And I mean, like, reviews are nice, and obviously everyone would love to be critically acclaimed and award winning and all that kind of stuff. But it's like, if people aren't reading your work and you kind of exist in this like really rarefied atmosphere, then it's like, well, you might as well have gone into academia, really.
Yeah, exactly. Just like a highly well-recognized published article, you know.
Which is,
you know, all very worthwhile things. And
Academia
has its place, but there's something nice about fiction and being able to touch someone deeply and reach their sort of heart.
Yeah, exactly.
And you mentioned that you you do sort of mentoring with an author, or you work with other authors sometimes. What advice would you give to aspiring authors trying to get their writing published and out in the world?
I would say always submit, especially to like free competitions, free workshops, like those kind of things. I would say always submit, even if you just use these like deadlines as a way of just getting your work done. So you know that, okay, I'm going to finish this short story by this deadline. So even if you've got no expectation, because the short story that's finished is like a really early draft and you know it needs more work, at least just submit it so that it's done, it's out there, it's finished, and now you can go back and work on it. I think that is really important, because a lot of the time we have this thing about rejection, like we're afraid of rejection, we're afraid of being told that we're not good enough. But if you can kind of get over that a little bit, I mean, I don't think we ever really get over it, because it's something that's really personal to us that we're putting out there. But if you can kind of get used to that muscle of just putting yourself out there, I think that can be really valuable and kind of helpful in the long run. And you just never know what might happen. Like, you might put a half finished story out there. So the first short story that I ever got published, well, the only short story at this point, is, no, that's a lie. This, I've had one published since then. But the first short story that I ever got published was for the Book of Birmingham, an anthology by Comma Press. And the very first version of that was not even finished. And I just sent it off to the editor, Kavita, and she gave me some feedback, and then I think the project got stalled for a while. And then she came back to me like maybe like a year or two later and was like, oh, you're still interested in kind of writing this? And I was like, yeah, sure. And I worked on it. But I think if I hadn't have sent her that really terrible first draft, I wouldn't have even been on her radar to come back to. Do you get what I mean? Like, she wouldn't have even known that I'd have written anything. So I'd always say, just put yourself out there. And I always say, anything that is free, that you can enter for free, like, just do it, submit it, and you never know what might happen.
Yeah, I think you're right. It's almost good practice just to be submitting things, just to sort of, even if it's like a workshop that you have no intention of going to, just it sort of helps you develop that thick skin that you're probably going to need.
Yeah, exactly.
Amazing. That's great advice. And that brings us on to the final question, which is, if, Jandela, you were stranded on a desert island with one book, which book would you take?
I feel like this is a cheat, but it's the truth. I would take the New Daughters of Africa anthology, either one or two, edited by Margaret Busby, the amazing, legendary publisher. I think one of the first, or if not the first, like Black publisher within the UK. It's a tome. It's bigger than the Bible. It is so and there's so much in there that I would definitely be kept reading for a while. But yeah, I think that would definitely keep me busy, and I'll just get to read a bunch of different writers. So for those who don't know, it's kind of like a collection of writing by Black women of African descent, like all kinds of different writers at all different stages of their careers. So that is what I would take.
That's a great choice. I mean, always smart to get something in there where you have different writing styles throughout. Clever. And obviously, yes, bigger the better when you're stranded on a desert island.
Exactly.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much, Jendela. Thanks for coming on the podcast, telling us all about Hope and Glory and all the sort of writing journey that you've been through. It's been really interesting chatting with you.
No, thank you for having me. I've really enjoyed our conversation.
And for everyone listening, if you want to keep up with everything that Jendela is doing, you can go to her website, www.jendela.co.uk, or you can follow her on socials at Jendela. That's J-E-N-D-E-L-L-A. To make sure you don't miss an episode of this podcast, follow us on Right and Wrong UK for Twitter and on Instagram at Right and Wrong Podcast. Thanks again to Jendela, and thanks to everybody who's listening. We'll catch you in the next episode. Thanks for hanging around until the end. If you're interested in starting your own podcast but aren't really sure what that looks like, I can't recommend Zencastr enough. It's so simple to host, record, and download your podcast with, and it even has a built-in transcription AI. It functions entirely in the internet browser, which means all your guests have to do is click on a link and they'll be brought into the conversation. If you click on the link in the description, you'll get 30% off the first 3 months. All you have to do is click on the link in the description. Thanks again for supporting the show, and we'll see you in the next episode.
Save big money when you start your next project today at Menards. Convert your current recessed lighting with energy-saving LED downlights from Fight Electric. They're bright and install easily in just minutes. They also go from regular lighting to nightlight mode with just a simple flip of a switch. Save big on all Fight lighting products now at Menards. Shop our lighting options today in-store and on Menards.com.
Save big money at Menards.